In the 1960s, I was a teenager and preteen, and early in the 60s, my brother and I, my parents, were riding in the car and listening to the radio to rock songs, pop songs, and this song came on that was all about love. And I, of course, I was 11 or something, and I said, "Love, love, love. Why does every song have to be about love?" And my brother Michael, who was a, and possibly still is, a lovesick teenager, said, "What else is there?" Now, if you have heard me preach more than once, you have probably noticed that I'm just like those songs. I'm all about love, love, love. And no one disagrees with me that it's important. At least no one disagrees until love becomes real and difficult and humbling. Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep." And 1 John asks us to lay down our lives for one another. Love is not as widely praised in its practical forms. Forgiveness, humility, apology. These hard choices are the ways we are called as followers of Jesus to lay down our lives in the service of love. So what exactly is required to lay down your life this way? We have to yield our personal agendas. We have to live with humility. We have to live with compassion. I just read a very irritating book called Why Won't You Apologize? The book told me something that I kind of knew, but it articulated it well. It says that apologies that are followed by but or if are worse than no apology at all. The book says a false blame-reversing apology is worse than no apology because it repeats and deepens the insensitivity. Ow. I want to explain myself when I apologize instead of just saying, "I'm sorry I hurt you." But it's your own darn fault. Not really. Can you erase that off the tape? But when you do say these things, these rationalizations or these explanations with your apology, you discount or dismiss that the offended party has been hurt. When "but" is tagged on to an apology, it undoes the sincerity. It doesn't matter if the statement after that is true. It makes the apology false. The book tells about a cartoon in which there were a father and his grown son. And the father is saying to the son, "I wanted to be there for you growing up. I really did. But then I got a foot cramp. And then a thing came up at the store. Anyway, you understand." We don't apologize very well because we want to explain our behavior. It's not a terrible impulse, but it's not as pure as apologizing and saying, "I'm sorry I hurt you." Now, one of the other unpopular forms of love is something called humility. I personally believe we struggle with humility because it sounds far too much like humiliation. But there is a huge difference in these two words. To humiliate means to reduce someone to a lower position, to make someone ashamed. Humility in the dictionary is described as freedom from pride or arrogance. Humiliation puts the power in human hands. Humility seeks the power of God's hands. And you have to be humble to choose to lay down your life on behalf of God and the other person. We have to be humble to pick up the cross. One writer says, humility is not weakness, but strength, for it receives the strength of God. For into the vacuum created by the demolition of human pride and self-sufficiency pours the fullness of God. Of course, we know that the opposite of humility is arrogance, and few of us would want to embrace arrogance. But the difficult, tricky thing is that arrogance can look like self-reliance. One author says, arrogance compels us to treat our limits not as unique openings through which God can reveal his goodness, but as diseases to be cured. We find it almost impossible to be self-effacing, as if we must maintain a know-it-all posture that demands a final answer to mystery. We don't know everything. We can't do everything. In the face of God's power and God's mystery, and in the face of the chaos of this life, we are often without words, without explanation, without power. To imitate Jesus, the Good Shepherd, we lay down our lives. We admit the powerlessness. We set aside our need for power. And we choose to apologize, to empathize, to embrace humility in the face of confrontation and challenge. We lay down our lives not only for the love of others, but for our own peace. Luke's gospel has Jesus saying, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will save it. What does it profit them if they gain the whole world, but lose or forfeit themselves? We are to offer our lives, to sacrifice our lives in these small ways. We are to take up the cross willingly. I know you will, most of you will be able to relate to this. For a long time, I had a coworker, and even before my churchy days, I thought of her as my cross to bear. She was very irritating. And she just kind of made me crazy. And I would try to be pious, and, you know, the nicest thing I could think of to say was that she was my cross to bear. But picking up your cross, bearing your cross, is something that is done intentionally, willingly, obediently. Most of the time when we say someone is our cross to bear, it's because we've tried everything to rid ourselves of them and have been unsuccessful. Humility says, choose to pick up the cross. Humility says, empty yourself of your earthly agenda so God's power can rush into that vacuum. Do it willingly, not as a last resort, because you've finally admitted your powerlessness. We know this kind of choice can be extremely painful. To love sounds harmless. Something everybody agrees is a good thing to do. Lay down your life for love by acting with humility and compassion isn't quite as popular. Love isn't as pretty and as universally appreciated when it must take practical form. Genuine apology. Genuine humility. Choosing compassion over competition. These are the real, the difficult, the unpopular manifestations of laying down one's life for God and neighbor. But these are all manifestations of love. And after all, what else is there?